Genesis chapter 27. I've entitled the message tonight, Signs of a Dysfunctional Family. And some things in here that can be of help to us, I believe. A dysfunctional family is a family in which there are conflicts and sinful behavior and hurtful words from the parents and the children on a regular occurrence. And it leads to heartache and waywardness. And no parent is perfect, that's for sure, but a dysfunctional family, in that family, he or she ignores or denies there's problems. And that's really bad. Not a good thing at all. And we find here that Isaac and Rebekah, in their family, they have become a dysfunctional family. A lot of these things we're going to be looking at here are symptoms of their family and signs that we see there in their family. Now, so as we look at this tonight, I want us to notice, first of all, the signs of a dysfunctional family, then the sources and the solutions to that same dysfunctional family. So look, first of all, at the signs. And we're going to take each one of these characters that are in the, or family members, actually what they are, in the story, and we'll look at how they interact and how they respond and the things that they did. First of all, we see here that there's failure in leadership. And we see that in Isaac's life. Isaac was to be the leader of the family. He was the father. He was the one that God had ordained to be in that position of leadership. And we see in the first verse, and it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his eldest son, and said unto him, my son. And he said unto him, behold, here am I. And he said, behold now, I am old, and I know not the day of my death. Now, therefore, take, I pray thee, thy weapons and thy quiver and thy bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison. And he make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat it, and that my soul may bless thee before I die. All right, now, being a curious person, you need to ask some questions about these kind of things. He says here he's old and he can't see anymore. That's a significant fact. And yet, and I didn't take the time to actually dig out and count up the day, years, but years and years and years later, like probably 30 or 40 years later, he dies. So all that time he was blind. Tragic. You know, the last many, many years of his life, he was blind. And he couldn't see. That's really sad. But here's blind Isaac, and he calls in Esau, and he says, it's time to give you the family blessing. And that was a significant thing. But here Isaac is a very poor leader in the family. And that is an example of his fault in this area. You know, God held Adam responsible when Adam and Eve fell into sin. You know, Adam and Eve sinned. Actually, Eve was the first one to eat of that fruit, and she gave it to Adam. But who did God speak to? God says, Adam, where art thou? He didn't say, hey, Eve, where'd you go? He didn't say that. He said, Adam. And so God addressed Adam in this situation because God held him responsible. He was the leader. He was the head of his home. Over in Ephesians chapter 5, we've noted several times now on that Sunday mornings that God holds the husband responsible for being the leader, as Christ is the leader in the church. And so the leadership there hangs on the husband or the father of the home. And when the family becomes dysfunctional, the father is the only one, not the only one that's guilty, but he's the one that's responsible. Well, it's important for us to see that. And Isaac here is responsible for this poor leadership. And he is selfish in what he's doing here. He loved Esau. Remember, he loved Esau. Why? Because Esau was the one that would go out hunting venison and bringing venison in. He really loved his venison. So, and Esau was his firstborn. Now remember, these boys were born as twins. Esau was born moments before Jacob was. He was the firstborn, no question about that, but it was only moments difference between the two of them. They weren't like, you know, a few years difference. But he knew that Esau was not a godly man. In fact, the last chapter closed out with those last two verses there in chapter 26, and it says, and Esau was 40 years old, and he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Beshemoth, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. All right? And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. All right, so these two Hittites, the Hittites were the enemies. The Hittites were the pagans. They were the unbelievers. And he marries two unbelieving wives. And this is a grief to Isaac and Rebekah. And Isaac knew that. Isaac was aware of that. That certainly wasn't something that slipped his mind. Not only that, but it seems very unlikely that Isaac didn't know what God told Rebekah before she gave birth. Remember that back there when she was saying, "What's going on? I've got all this struggle in my belly. But something's happening." And she goes to God and says, "God, what's happening? This is very unusual." And God says, "There's twins in your belly. You've got twins coming. And they're fighting each other." And God said the younger will be superior. The older will serve the younger. God told them right from the beginning. And so God knew that. And God knew that that's the way it was going to be, and that's what God had planned. And Isaac, I believe, understood that and knew that. But he certainly, there was pride involved in this as well. He wanted his older son to be the one in charge. And he wanted his older son, even though he was not godly, he had no interest in the things of God. He had married two ungodly wives, and things were not going well. And here God is looking at the whole situation. And remember, God has a plan. When God spoke to Abraham, what did God tell Abraham? He said, "Abraham, all the nations of the world will be blessed by you and by your descendants." And God knew something Abraham didn't know, that down centuries later, Jesus Christ would come from their line. God knew that. That was all part of God's plan. And it could not be that Esau, who was godless and had forsaken God and had no interest in God, could not be that Esau would be the one that would continue on that line. God knew all that, and God had it all planned. And Isaac, here we see that he was out of tune with God. You know, prior to his calling in Esau, there's nothing in the scripture that says, "And Esau spent time with God and asked God what he should do, and God said..." No, he didn't do that. There's no indication that he prayed, no indication that he sought God about it, no indication that he had any desire. And even if he did, he must not have listened to God, because he didn't do what God really wanted. And he must not have obeyed God in this situation. So he had disobeyed God as well. And he knew what God had said way back there before the boys were born, that the older would serve the younger. And God knew all that. Isaac knew that. Now, he also obviously did not communicate with Rebekah. Poor communication in their marriage. And he didn't come in and say, "Sweetheart, listen, it's about time for me to give out this birth, the blessing, and I don't know when I'm going to die. I'm old and I'm not feeling very well. I think maybe I better take care of this thing right now before I get old and die." He didn't talk to her about it. He didn't say, "This is what I'm going to do. What do you think?" He didn't, none of this. So there was no communication between the two of them. And we see also that rather than admitting his fault, later on, as we continue on reading, we see down in verse number 33, and I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but just give you the input here. Verse 33, and it says, "And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, 'Who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it to me? And I have eaten it of all before thou camest and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed.'" So what, he trembles there. It's not like he's saying, "Oh, God's caught up with me here. I didn't do what God wanted." No, he trembled because he wanted to do it his way, and he didn't get to do it his way. He wanted to do it the way he wanted rather than what God had planned and what God had wanted. And rather than admitting his fault, he trembles here. And he blamed Jacob for the whole situation. And Jacob was a lot to blame. I'm not denying that. But he blamed Jacob rather than admitting to Esau that he had not obeyed God. Verse number 35 of the same chapter, and says, "And he said, 'Thy brother came in with subtlety and hath taken away thy blessing.'" All right? He should have, as the leader of the family, he should have said, "Son, I was wrong. God didn't want you to have that blessing. God doesn't want that for you. I had to give it to your son or your brother." He didn't do any of that. He says, "It's Jacob's fault. Jacob deceived me," and that's how it all happened. And so Isaac here is really, he seems to be out of touch with the things of God, and he's not walking with God like he should be. He was very poor in his leadership. So we see here, first of all, the failed leadership. But secondly, we see disharmony. And we see this in Rebekah's life. In verse number 5, it says, "And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau, his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for the venison and to bring it in. And Rebekah spake unto Jacob, her son, saying, Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau, thy brother, saying, Bring me venison and make me savory meat that I may eat and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. Go now to the flock and fetch me from thence two good kids of the goats, that I may make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, and that he may eat, and that he may bless thee before his death. And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father will peradventure will feel me, and I shall seem to be as a deceiver, and he shall bring a curse upon me, and not a blessing. And notice his mother's words, 13. And his mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice, and go and fetch them. So you see a lot of deceitfulness here in disharmony in Rebekah's situation. She's not at all in communion with Isaac. They're not discussing this. They're working in disharmony. They're working against each other. And God ordained that she be his completer, not his competition. And yet that's exactly what she's doing here. She's disloyal as a wife. She disagrees with Isaac. And instead of just talking it over with him and saying, you know, we need to have a talk about this. You know, this is what God had said. This is what God promised. And, you know, no, she didn't do that. She plotted instead to work behind Isaac's back. And she wanted her beloved son, Jacob, to get that blessing. Now, for us, we might not think that much about this, but the blessing was an important thing. Now, Jacob had already stolen the birthright. But now the blessing was a special blessing. And I don't really fully understand this, but God, in some special way, honored those blessings. You think about Jacob later on, years later, when he calls all his 12 sons in and gives them all his blessings, and you're going to do this, and this is what's going to happen to you, you know, those are the things that happened, and God honored that. And so whether he knew God was revealing to him something about the future or whether God was fulfilling what he said there in his little talk with the boys, I don't know. But there was something special about that, and it was something very important that they wanted and they cherished. And so this was a very important time in a man's life as he would pass on the baton to his oldest son to carry on things. And here Rebekah's working against this. And, you know, she may have excused her disloyalty by saying, well, I'm just helping God because God, you know, told me that Jacob's going to be the leader. You know, sometimes we do that sometimes, think that we're going to help God out by doing it our way. God doesn't need our help. And we know that, but deep down inside, sometimes we think, well, yeah, but, you know, God, if I didn't do something about this, what would happen? God's not lost control. He can still take care of things. And he doesn't need us conniving to do it our way in order to get things done the way that we think he wants it done. And she was a deceitful wife, and she commanded Jacob several things here to deceive his father. Don't forget, all right, this is an important thing to remember. Back in chapter 26 and verse 34, now remember the boys were twins. How old did it say that Esau was in verse 34? He was 40 years old. He was 40 years old. So these boys are not little boys. They're not little, you know, 10-year-olds and not knowing what to do with themselves. They are mature men. Esau is already married. He's got two wives. Probably has a bunch of kids too. They're not little boys. And Jacob and Esau are both the same age. And now he comes in before his father, and his mother tells him all these things. So here's this 40-year-old man, and his mother's saying, all right, now come on, son, you got to do these things that I tell you to do. And Jacob knew it wasn't right. Remember, he said, yeah, but I'm going to get a curse on me if I do that. He says, don't worry about it, son. I'll take your curse. You just do what I tell you to do. So she's deceiving. Deceiving Jacob, actually, in that one. And she was the one that said that she would cook the food, these kids, to be able to taste like venison. She knew how Esau cooked his venison. And so he was to get those kids, and she was going to cook them and make them the same kind of way and with the same herbs and things in it and the same gravy over it, all the same stuff that they would normally do with making the venison to make it taste as much like that as possible. And Isaac, he tasted it, and he thought it was venison. He didn't know the difference. It fooled him. So Rebecca was involved in all of that. And she then also said that she, down in verse number 15, she said, and Rebecca took the goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which was with her in the house, and put it upon Jacob, her son. So she says, here, I got one of Esau's jackets right here. You put this on, that'll fix the problem. We'll take care of that. And then verse 16, notice what she does. And she put skins of the kids, of the goats, upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck. All right, so she took these skins of these goats that were still soft and pliable and stuck in. He kind of probably put one of the arms of the kids, you know, and just, all right, stick your arm down here. Come on, pull it on. And it's a big sleeve. And then she, around the fingers, she probably tucked it down in and took some thread and sewed it around his fingers so it, you know, fit tightly around here, and put the other leg of the goat on the other hand and pulled it up there and tight. And so it was tight on his arm and sewed it down good. And then took another part of it and maybe the neck of the goat or something, or and maybe pulled it over his head, you know, pulled it down and tucked it around there and pulled it up under his beard and, you know, get it down, good, down his shirt. Look at that. Ah, perfect. He'll never know. And by the time he wore that for a little bit, it had warmed it all up. And so it felt warm. It felt just like his warm skin. So Esau obviously had a lot of hair if the goat's hair felt like Esau's hair. And Jacob was a smooth man. And so through this, she's got it all plotted out and all planned out. And she tells Jacob to do all these things. And then in verse 17, she gave him savory meat and the bread which she had prepared and put it into his hands. So she's got all this plotted out. She was a very deceitful woman. And she's not a very good mother. She's a poor motherly example to him. She failed as a wife. She failed as a mother. She's being deceitful. Not a good thing here. And nowhere in all of this do we see her ever seeking God's mind in all this. You know, Isaac didn't seek God's mind, as far as we can tell. There's nothing said that he did. And Rebecca certainly didn't. She didn't come to God and say, God, is it okay that I've deceived Isaac like this? And is it okay if we do all this? No, she didn't do that. You can be sure of that. And so she's out of touch with God. He's out of touch with God. Things are not going well in this family. So we have here a family where the leadership has fallen apart. Deceitfulness has stepped in and there's disharmony. The wife is working against the husband. Things are not going well. They're trying to get the children to do things that are wrong. It's not a good situation. Then we move on to Jacob. And we see in verse number 18 to 29 that there is discontent and deception in Jacob's life. And Jacob now is old enough that he could have stood up and said, Mom, listen, this isn't right. You know, I mean, I'm a grown man now, and I'm not going to do these kind of things. It's not right for me to deceive Dad like that. Dad's taught me the right things, and he's taught me what is right and true and godly, and I'm not going to do that, Mom. But he didn't do that. He didn't stand up. He went along with it. And I think the reason is because deep down inside, he really wanted that blessing. He wanted that blessing as much as Mom wanted him to have that blessing. And he coveted that blessing, and he wanted that special blessing that he was going to get. And so he agreed to be deceitful. He went along with his mother's crooked plans to deceive his father. And though he said there in verse 12, he said he knew it was not right, but yet his mom said, I'll take the curse, don't worry about it, son. And so he goes along with that, even though he knew that it wasn't the right thing. And he went out and he killed the kids, you know, those two goats, and he went out to the flock. I often wonder, why got two? You know, why would you need two goats to make meat for one meal? I don't know. Must have been a big platter of meat. I don't know. But so he went out and got the two goats. He was responsible for that. He had to go out there, catch those goats, kill those goats, skin them, and dress them, and get them all ready, and bring it in for Mom to cook in all this. And so he's done all that. He's been playing in with the deceitfulness of all this. And he allowed his mom to sew those skins on his arms and on his neck. And he allowed her to give him that food that she had prepared and said, you know, it's all flavored like it's supposed to be. And now you take this into your dad. And then we find that he becomes a very bold liar. He goes into his dad and he lies to his dad at least four times. He lies to his father. Verse number 19. And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. All right, let me start off in 18, then we'll get the context. And he said unto his father, and he came unto his father and said, Father, and he said, Here am I. Who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, lie number one, I am Esau, thy firstborn. That's his first lie. The second lie, I have done according as thou hast badest me. He says, I'm your firstborn. I did what you told me to do. Arise, I pray thee, and sit and eat of the venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac said unto his son, How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? Lie number three. This is really getting bad now. And he said, Because the Lord thy God brought it to me. Ooh, now you're bringing God into the whole thing. He's lying. He said, God brought the thing to me. And he knew very well God didn't bring that thing to her. He knew very well he had gone out and killed those kids, and his mom cooked it all and deceived. He's lying to his father very boldly. And Isaac said unto Jacob, Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my son Esau or not. And Jacob went near unto Isaac, his father, and he felt him. Now here's a lie that wasn't a verbal lie, but he was a deceitful lie. And he felt him, and he said, The voice of Jacob is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. All right, so he deceived his father. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, Art thou my very son Esau? Here's lie number four. And he said, I am. So four clear times he lied to his father. And he deceived his father with the meat. He deceived his father with the skins on his arms. He is really doing things that are not right before God. And so we see here the dysfunctional family falling apart. There's covetousness, there's deceit, there's lying, there's the weakness of character here. But then we bring Esau into the picture in verse number 30. And Esau, we see here more bitterness and anger and revenge as it brings all these things together. And you know, the verses in between here, he goes and he blesses him and he gives him all the special blessings. Well, let me just read verses 28 and 29. Therefore, God, he's talking to Jacob now, thinking he's talking to Esau. Therefore, God give thee the dew of the heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine, and let thy people serve thee and nations bow down to thee. Be thou Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curses thee, and blessed be he that blesses thee. All right, so these are some of the blessings that Jacob got through deception. In verse number 30, And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, that Jacob was scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, that Esau, his brother, came in from hunting. And he also had made savory meat and brought it to his father. And he said unto his father, Let my father arise and eat of thy son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac, his father, said unto him, Who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, the firstborn, Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, Who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it to me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry, and said to his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, Thy brother came in subtly, and hath taken away thy blessing. And he said, Is not he rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now behold, now he taketh away my blessing. And he said, Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, Behold, I have made him thy lord, and all his brethren have I given him to be for servants. And with corn and wine have I sustained him. And what shall I do now for thee, my son? And Esau said unto his father, Hast thou not but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac said unto his Isaac his father answered and said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be in the fatness of the earth, and of the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live, and shall serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob. Now, you see the dysfunction in the family is increasing. Now there's bitterness, there's anger, there's revenge and hatred. And Esau is after Jacob now. He hates him now and he wants to kill him because of what he did. The dysfunction continues to build. Now, all that's the signs of the dysfunction. What are the sources? Where did it all come from? Why did all this happen? You know, when you just stop back and step back from the story and you look at the whole story and you ask yourself, why did that happen? Why couldn't it have just been a real nice, happy story where everything went well and everything, you know, fell together properly and God was in the center of it and they were blessing God and rejoiced? Why didn't it go the right way? I think the first reason is because they neglected God. They neglected God. And God was not in the center of their focus of their family. If God had been in the center of that family, they wouldn't have had all that dysfunction. But in a practical sense, it appears that Isaac and Rebekah just left God out of the family. It was like they didn't even talk to God about the issues. It wasn't like they were bringing it to God and praying about it and seeking God's mind. They just left God out. And you know, the same thing is true in our families. If we leave God out of the center core of our families, I'm not talking about just saying, you know, grace at the table before you eat your meal, or, you know, praying with the kids before bed. I'm not talking about just that. I'm talking about God needs to be in the center of our families in every area. And all that we do, our whole life is about God. It's about serving God. It's about loving God. It's about worshiping God. It's about praising God. It's about acting in a way that would honor God. All of that, our whole life is centered around God. And if it's not, we're going to end up with problems. And that's exactly what happened to Isaac and Rebekah. They also failed to pray. We already talked about that, but there's no indications they prayed. Isaac and Rebekah both knew what God told them before the boys were born. They knew that. And they didn't pray about that. They didn't seek God's mind in that. And Isaac did what he wanted to do rather than seeking what God wanted. He should have said, God, what do you want? But he didn't pray about it. As far as we can tell, he didn't even talk to God about it at all. Now, I know the scriptures don't give us all the information. And, you know, I don't think I'm reading into it too much because the context doesn't indicate here at all that he had spoke to God. And then there's also selfish living. Each family member was very selfish. Isaac wanted his favorite son, his oldest one, to get the blessing, and he was looking forward to giving that blessing to him because he loved his oldest son. And Rebekah wanted her son Jacob to get it because he was her favorite son, and there was selfishness there. I want my way in this thing. And Jacob's thinking, yes, and I want that blessing too. And I want that. And there was selfishness. And Esau is saying, this isn't fair. I want it my way. And if I don't get it my way, I'll kill my brother for this. Because I didn't get it my way. Selfishness on every turn. They wanted to please themselves. And selfishness is deeply rooted in every dysfunctional family. And we struggle with selfishness because we all have selfishness in us. We want it our way. That's why we have disharmony in our families. That's why there's disharmony in marriages, because I want it my way. And that causes us grief. So it's the solution. The solution to dysfunctional family is to daily make time with God a priority. And, you know, I've preached this many times, and it's nothing new to your ears, but it's something we need to focus on. Every day, it has to be a priority. And it starts with the husband. You know, dad needs to be one who's setting an example of prioritizing his time with God every single day. Instead of saying, well, I just don't have time today. I'll catch up later on. And before I go to bed, I'll catch up. You know, one of the things I found out, if I don't spend time with God first thing in the morning, And I put it off until a little bit later, and then I get busy and say, oh, yeah, I've got to remember to do it. I'll do it just before bed. And you get in bed, and you're exhausted, you fall asleep, and you're almost asleep, and you go, oh, I forgot to read my Bible. I'll read it twice tomorrow. And, you know, it happens that way. That's just the way the devil works in us. We've got to make it a priority, and it's not easy. But that's what we have to do as leaders in our home. Remember what God told the husbands in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, he says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and in being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. There needs to be communication with our spouse. And Isaac and Rebekah didn't communicate very good. The whole family should know that dad walks with God. That it should be an obvious thing that dad is walking with the Lord and doing what is right. And he ought to be able to say, as a father over there in Proverbs says, in Proverbs 4, verses 1 and 2, where he says, hear ye, children, the instruction of a father, and attend to the knowledge and understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. That's sobering words. When you think about it, as a husband, we need to be able to say to our children, I give you good doctrine. Don't forsake the things I'm teaching you and the things that I'm giving you, because I'm giving it to you from God and I'm giving it to you. It's right. It's a big responsibility. The wife, on the other hand, must be set aside quality time every day for Bible reading and prayer. And, you know, her family and acquaintances ought to know her as the woman that feareth the Lord, as in Proverbs 31 and verse 30. And it ought to be true that her heart, the heart of her husband, does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil, Proverbs 31:11. That's an important thing. You know, I preached through that several years ago. But when it says that her husband hath no need of spoil, remember what spoil was? The spoil was what they took at the end of a battle. And when they would take at the end of the battle, it wasn't just possessions, it was also slaves and maidens. And they would often find, you know, a secondary wife or a third or fourth, whatever the case may be, and because of their polygamous ways. And here he says that she was so precious to her husband that he safely trusted in her, and he had no need of spoil. I don't need another secondary wife. I don't need another, you know, woman around here. I've got all I need with her. There needs to be a harmony and a union and a love there and a bond in that family. But then also each child should learn to, at an early age, read the Bible on a daily basis and talk with God. You know, that's something that's so important for children to learn, that they would learn to be in the Scriptures. Remember young Timothy? Over in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15, what did Paul say about Timothy? He said, and that from a child thou hast known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation. He said, from a child you knew that. Now, that was an important situation, because Timothy knew the Scriptures from a child, and yet his mom was the one that was teaching him, because his father was a Greek. He wasn't even a believer, apparently. And so his mother was teaching him the Scriptures from the time he was a child. And very important, they were learning the Scriptures and reading the Scriptures and spending time together. So the Scriptures really need to be a daily part of our lives and a priority. But then also we need to seek to know God intimately. And, you know, we could spend time on this, but I'm going to have to just go through it quickly. But we need to know God and know that God delights in us knowing Him. Jeremiah 9:23-24 says, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord which exercise love and kindness, judgment and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. He said, God delights in us knowing him, and we need to strive to know God. We need to search the Scriptures daily and look for God in the Scriptures. One preacher put it this way, search to find God on every page of the Bible. And you know, that'll help us. If you look for in the Scriptures and say, what does this teach me about God? What can I see here? It will help us if we'll do that. Proverbs 2:1-6 is a great section on that, that talks about that, of searching and seeking and digging to be able to find knowledge of God. And then also we need to note carefully the qualities and characteristics of God. One of the places this week as I was reading in Psalms that stuck out in my mind in this area and I thought this was really, really helpful and I spent some time meditating on it, is in Psalm 89. In Psalm 89, we see there in verses 5 to 12, and look at the characteristics of God in here. It says, "The heavens shall praise thy wonders, O Lord, thy faithfulness also in the congregation of the saints. For who in heaven can be compared unto the Lord? Who among the sons of the mighty can be likened unto the Lord? God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints, and to be had in reverence of all them that are about him. The Lord God of hosts, who is strong like unto thee, or to thy faithfulness around about thee. Thou rulest the raging of the sea, and when the waves thereof arise, and thou stillest them. Thou hast broken Rahab in pieces, and as one that is slain, thou hast scattered thine enemies with thy strong arm. The heavens are thine, and the earth also is thine, as for the world and the fullness thereof, thou hast founded them." I mean, this is just one little tiny section of Scripture, but it's over and over again. It tells you all kinds of things about God, about His creation, about His power, about His might, about His ability, about His character. And watch for God and learn to know about God. And then lastly, we need to deny ourselves and live for God and others. You know, that will help prevent a dysfunctional family. If we live for God and we live for others. Remember Jesus' strong pronouncement to the people, or to his disciples, when he said that they wanted to be his disciples. And Jesus said to them in Luke chapter 9 and verse 23, he said, "And he said unto them all, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." Deny himself. We need to deny ourselves. That's the opposite of selfishness, to deny ourselves. And then Jesus also said that the two greatest things that we can do in life is to love God and to love our neighbor. And he made that very clear. And if we would do these things, it would help us to be able to overcome all of the characteristics and the temptations to a dysfunctional family. We need to have God in the center of our home. God has to be at the center of our hearts, the center of our thoughts, the center of our passion. And we need to deny ourselves and put God up and lift Him up, and we get to know God. And the more we can know God and the more we can defeat ourselves and to seek God and to seek His will, the better we'll have a happy, harmonious family. So I trust that tonight you will resolve in your own hearts, if any of these signs of dysfunctional family are found in your home, you need to say, "God, help us to get rid of those things. And help us to be able to address these things and forsake those sins and to resolve to make the different changes that we need to make so that we can have a home that is pleasing to God."